We just recorded a fun video for Path Projects. They are part of our community, Don, and they put out a call to action to the trail runners to provide some fun videos. And we recorded one of those. If you want to see it, you can go to our YouTube channel and check it out.
Everything's fresh over there, Scott, and they're always producing new gear because they have their finger on the pulse of the trail. And it's great to see the new shorts, the new hats. Everything is always changing over there for the better.
And I'm a little giddy right now. Scott over at Path Projects told us about these new shorts and a new hat, and he has some in the mail. We should be getting it today, which means we could be running in them tomorrow, Don.
Hey, you are in 6 feet separation.
Of course, Scott. Of course.
I've noticed you're like a little kid waiting to unwrap your present at Christmas time. It's exciting. It's exciting to see the mailman come.
Yeah. You know, in times of distress like we are right now, treat yourself. If you have the resources, go out and give yourself some really good gear. It'll help you get out on the trail and make that trail run just more enjoyable.
And when you talk about good gear, not only does it fit right and it looks right, but I don't know if you're finding this, Scott. I am. It's durable. I can't tell my newest piece of gear from my first piece of gear. It just stays good.
Functional. That's what I like about their gear. Go to pathprojects.com or you can go to our partners page and just click on that banner. Do you experience stress, have anxiety or chronic pain, or have trouble sleeping at least once a week? Let our friends at Feels help you. You're not alone, and they have a solution.
What is Feels? That's F-E-A-L-S. It's a premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep.
Hey, Don, I have found that when I take Feels, I have a restful sleep. I wake up feeling rejuvenated.
And it's easy to take. You just put a few drops of Feels under your tongue and feel the difference within minutes.
There's a lot of questions you may have about CBD. Well, let me tell you, the Feels team has you covered. They have a free CBD hotline to help guide you on your first experience.
And one of the questions people have, does Feels make you feel high or hungover or get addicted? And it does not. It's a natural product.
They have memberships that are available. And in fact, they're willing to give you 50% off your first order if you join a membership with them. You can get that membership at Feels, feals.com/trn, and you can get 50% off that first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/trn, and you can get 50% off your first order with free shipping if you sign up for their membership.
Hey, Scott, we have a public service announcement, and we're here with Croy from Exoskin. And we all know the great fabrics that their socks and their shorts and their shirts are made out of. And the same fabric they've found can be used as a mask. The same producers of this yarn and this fabric and this material, they're building masks.
And the most important part of that fiber is the copper fiber, which is an antimicrobial, and the yarn makers are now turning their factories into mask-making factories, and they're now available for you to order.
And important to know, this is not an Exoskin product. They're not looking to capture the market and make money from this. They're extending their great connections with this fabric to help all of us breathe a little bit easier and a little bit safer. And Croy, we thank you for doing that. Can you give us a few details that Scott and I have left out?
Sure. Well, thank you both for letting me come on and talk a couple minutes here. We've been busy for the past couple of weeks. The owner, Rick, has been working tirelessly with the yarn producers and the three knitting companies who are turned their focus from the products that they traditionally make to making facial masks. So there are two companies that have their products on the markets today, and I'll mention their websites a little bit later. But, Scott, you hit it right on the head. It's the copper technology is one of the critical components for killing any bacteria and viruses that come in contact with the copper fibers. We're not making any medical claims with this product. It is not an Exoskin product. But the focus is obviously needed to be shifted to getting products out in the market and that are available for people to buy if they so choose to do so.
And one of the shifts, by the way, that we've seen, even where Don and I live here in California, in the county we live in, is, you know, prior to yesterday, they said, really, you don't need to wear a mask unless you are infected. That's changed. It changed yesterday for our county here in California, and I would think that it's going to be changing in other places as well, where they are requiring anyone that leaves their home to wear a face covering. So why not use a good one that you know has some antimicrobial fibers in it that can help you keep you safe and, more importantly, keep your neighbor and the people you come in contact safe?
We've learned to trust Exoskin on the trail and when in the harshest of conditions, and we appreciate you lending your material expertise over to the mask, which will help us. We'll have those listed in the show notes, Scott, these websites that Croy has for us.
And also on our partners page. Hey, Croy, if someone is looking for a very good face mask, where can they go to get one of these?
Well, we have two partners that have sites up right now. The first one is www.c29mask.com. The second one is www.theramasks.com. So theramasks.com. There'll be a third site coming online at some point, and I can provide you guys with that information once that's available.
Okay, and we'll link those two sites in the show notes and also put those on the partners page so you can help keep your family and friends safe.
Sure thing.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Croy, for bringing this to our attention. Thank Rick for bringing it to our attention. You guys are good trail partners, and we know that you're doing things that will help us all become safe and stay strong and healthy.
Thank you guys as well. We appreciate the time to come on.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
You're trying to move. That's all you got. That's all you can do right now. You got it, Dylan. You got it, man. You can rally.
Mile 76. How are you feeling?
You know, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm tired.
What do you think? What do you think of the course today? What do you expected?
It's tough.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Mr. Jones Wilkins is still hunched over.
There, where were we?
We were about to run.
Yes, I think we better do that.
All right. That's ultra.
All right. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
I'm Andy Jones Wilkins.
And I'm Don Freeman.
Hey, and we're going to play one of our favorite games. This is Trail. It's actually not a game. Well, it kind of is a game. It's the Trail Runner Nation audio magazine.
Oh, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, you didn't
yes,
get the memo?
Indeed. It's audio magazine day. Come on, right. Don.
Let me write that down. I was going with grab bags.
Yeah, yeah, this is not grab bag. What was the other one? Drop bag was the other name of the...
Right.
This one has a small... Those of you who are playing, audio magazine has a small wrinkle that's different than drop bag or grab bag, and that is... We have to come up with a title for our virtual article that we're writing, and then the other two get to guess what the article is about, and then the author explains whether we're right or wrong, and then we go into a discussion about that. Is that what you guys planned?
Yeah, I'm writing my titles right now.
Okay. Hey, let's start with Andy, since Andy is always prepared. As a headmaster, he is always right on point, and he's always prepared. So we'll start with Andy. We'll give Don, you can have a few more minutes to come up with your titles.
Thank you.
Well, seeing as how we've all been spending a lot of time at home, I've been actually working on quite a few articles. So I've got some great articles for us to share in this edition of the Trail Runner Nation audio magazine. And the first one is titled, "You Never Forget Your First Time."
Oh,
you never forget your first time.
Okay, Don, you go first on this one.
Well, you know, what are we rating this episode, Scott? G or parental restriction?
I think I have the default as clean.
Okay, so, you know, I think you never forget your first trip through the finish line. I think AJW is going to talk about the euphoria that we feel as we've just exhausted all of our physical abilities, all of our emotions have left us as we've trudged through these extra miles, and all of a sudden, all at once, the glorious finish line just lifts everything away from you, and you never forget that.
I think that's a good guess, Don.
That wasn't a guess, Scott. That was based on knowledge.
I'm going to go a little bit on the other spectrum of the rainbow, and I'm going to say it the first time that you experience a bonk. Because bonks aren't something that you would experience in a normal everyday corporate life. You know, you can get tired, you can get fatigued, but you never really experience a bonk. So that's what mine is. Mine is your first bonk.
Guys, those are both very, very good guesses. Scott, yours is actually pretty close, but you're both wrong.
Oh, good. That's what this is about, AJW. Please enlighten us.
So you guys know, for whatever reason, I get asked a lot of questions about ultra running and tips and ideas and training ideas and racing.
But hey, AJW, can I interrupt you? That can't be because you're wearing your hat from your last race, a finished shirt, and your belt buckle, and a worn-out pair of trail running shoes down to the local coffee shop in the morning.
Or right now. He's doing it right now, too.
it might be something like that. But the point is, and of all the topics I get asked the most about, there is one that exceeds all others. And that is, how do you puke in a race and keep running? And so this article, You Never Forget Your First Time, is about that first time you puke in a race and how important it is for you to accept that experience, embrace that experience, really, really revel in the experience of puking in the first time, because you are going to puke again. And each time you puke in a race after that first time, you remember the first time, and it's never quite as miserable as that first time. So this is a story about that and about how important it is for you to accept that first experience of puking in an ultra and never, ever forget it.
Hey,
Don.
A wooden nickel. Go ahead, Scott.
Don, I was just going to make a short comment. I can guess what the intro to this podcast is going to be.
it might be that the what we've labeled is "That's Ultra" intro. And AJW, I'd like to hear a little background on that, because we've put that on a few intros with some classic vomiting sounds from some actual runners, Dylan Bowman and yourself, two highly regarded athletes that. Even the people up front are succumbed to this gastrointestinal issue. But, you know, if I had a wooden nickel for every time somebody's asked me, how do you puke and keep running, I would be a wealthy man.
At least in wood.
So, AJW, give us a little background on that intro so we can put some faces and names to this vomiting introduction that we use on occasion.
Well, it was in 2009 at Leadville. And you all might remember the name Kevin Sullivan. He was an ultra runner from Massachusetts. He's still around. I don't think he runs ultras anymore, but he had a great season in 2009. Actually, he was top five at Western States, and he was pacing me at Leadville. And it was before iPhones. He had just a little flip camera thing, and we were walking along the road out of Fish Hatchery. And I was drinking a Sprite or something, and he asked me how I was doing, and he pulled out his camera and thought this would be a fun time to take a little video of the proceedings at Leadville. And within about 10 seconds of him pulling out the camera and asking me what I thought of the course, I started vomiting. And instead of a nice, friendly pacer who would turn the video camera off and help his fellow runner, instead he just kept the camera running. running. And and it just ran for about 2 minutes. And then eventually I stopped puking and had a drink of water. And he said, so I guess we should keep going. And I said, yes, we should. And he said, that's ultra.
Yeah, that's such a classic. That's the way a pacer should be. You know, if you need to review something and look at the rules to be a pacer, that's a good example right there. No mercy.
I will say that was 2009. That was a full, you know, almost 17 years into my ultra career. So it was definitely not my first time.
Well, and I was going to say, if it is your first time, it goes against all urges or nature. I mean, if you're at home, or if you're at your office, or if you're, you know, at the grocery store and you puke, your knee jerk is, I need to go lay down, and I need to, I'm sick. I need to stop what I'm doing, and recalibrate. And so puking in an ultra is very different from that. Puking actually usually makes you feel better. And you got to keep on going. You still have a finish to complete.
Yes, puking is a strategy.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So and AJW, to your point that I've heard you say, I think it was you that said, you know, there's a magic 10 minutes after that puking that's somewhat euphoric, and you feel just so much better. So take advantage of that. You know, puke and go.
Yeah, in the post-puke euphoria, you really can take advantage of about 10 to 15 minutes, and then reality sets in and you have to start taking care of yourself again. But in those 10 to 15 minutes, you can get, you know, maybe get a mile or so down the trail, which isn't so bad.
Maybe a mile at 15 minutes.
The post-puke euphoria.
That's right.
Hey, Andy, I want to know, you know, you've been doing this for decades now. Do you remember the first time you puked?
Yes, it was in, there was a race it was in the mid 90s. I was living in Arizona. There's a race that's still out there called the Crown King Scramble 50K, but they, for a few years there, they had a 50 miler as well. And that was the first one I puked in. I felt like I had, I thought I'd swallowed a bug. You know, I had a feeling in the back of my throat, and I thought I swallowed a bug, and so I just started puking, and then that was my story, and I kind of stuck to it. So every time I've puked in an ultra since then, I've just, oh God, I just must have swallowed a bug, and it makes the experience less like it's your fault.
I remember my first time. I was just a spectator at a race. I couldn't believe what these people were doing.
I was going to say my first was at an aid station, and I did a sympathy puke.
Ah, well, see, we were thinking along the same line, Scott. I think you're next, Mr. War.
You know, I can do that. Hang on just a second. Let me get my notes out here. Okay, here is my title for my article, and this is not deep in the issue. This is right next to Andy's. Andy's is the title article. Mine is probably number two or number three, and then we'll decide, Freeman, when you give your article, whether you're in the front or whether you're stuck in the back. Good to the last drop? ?
Mm. Now, AJW, he has an emphasis on that last word. Drop.
Yeah, there's a question mark there. Good to the last drop.
Ooh, and so I'm just gonna submit, and I'm jumping in front of you, Andy, but really to give you a seed, because perhaps you'll really come up with it. I think he's referring to drop as a runner that's dropped from the race, a DNF. So maybe he's going that direction. Good to the last drop.
Like,
I don't even know where to go with that.
Like you're good and until you drop.
I don't know.
Okay, I think he's going with the old I forget what the company, Maxwell House or some coffee company that's good to the last drop. It's a study of coffee and caffeine in an ultra. Yeah. You know, and is it? And the question mark is it good to take caffeine in an ultra?
Well, I like your approach. It was Folgers coffee.
That's it. Folgers. Yeah. Folgers, yeah.
So, Don, I'm a little disappointed in you because we've had discussions about this.
Oh.
So I recently Andy is right on the money. Andy is right on the money. It is about caffeine. Andy's doing his victory dance. There's an audio book that's only available on Audible. So if you don't have an Audible subscription, you could go get one. It's a short audio book called Caffeine, How Caffeine Created the Modern World. And it's by an author named Michael Pollan. And he discusses the effects of caffeine. Caffeine is the number one used drug worldwide, and really the only one that we give pretty regularly to kids, you know, in sodas. And he goes in and he talks about how caffeine has changed the course of human history. Wars were won and lost by using coffee or caffeine. Economies have been dominated. It's the second most traded commodity in the world behind gasoline or oil. And it, interestingly enough, he goes into how it helped the Industrial Revolution, that when we started working more in factories, that they found that they could increase productivity with coffee breaks, one in the mid-morning and one in the mid-afternoon, and have their workers drink caffeine. Now, along with that, there's another great book that Don turned me on to. I don't know if you ever finished it, Don. It's a book by how come I don't have the name of the author? I don't have the name of the author. Darn it! But the book is called Why We Sleep: Unlocking the Power of Sleep and Dreams, and he goes in and talks about how important sleep is. And we're going to hopefully have a podcast that's completely devoted to this. But he talked about how caffeine has disrupted our sleep patterns and how it may not be healthy on a regular basis, that it blocks I can't remember the name of the receptor, but and this is the last comment, and then you guys can chirp in. NASA did a study where they gave caffeine to spiders and then observed how they spun their webs. They actually gave them LSD, speed, marijuana, and caffeine. And I'll put a link to the, or not a link, but I'll put the photo in the show notes. But the caffeine web is the worst looking spider web of the ones with LSD, speed, marijuana, and a normal web. So my question to you is, how do you use caffeine? Is caffeine good? Is it bad for racing and training?
Go ahead, AJW, unless you'd like me to go.
I'm fascinated to hear of that book. First of all, Scott, Michael Pollan, I've read him. I remember The Omnivore's Dilemma. I think it's probably now like 15 years old. Great book about, you know, humans and their relationship with food and things like that. Caffeine has always been an important part of my race day planning. I need a cup of coffee or so to get going in the morning on race day. And then I would typically, in a long race, 100-mile race, begin using caffeinated gels and sip off Coke or coffee if it's cold out in the latter parts of the race. So caffeine's always helped me, and particularly if I was going into a race and I might get sleepy at the end of it. I've also known people, I've experimented with it to less success, but I have known people who, when going into races that might cause them to have to deal with sleep deprivation, like 200-mile races or things like Barkley or the big backyard ultras, they'll detox from caffeine for 2, 3, 4 weeks beforehand and then take in the caffeine during the race, and it'll give them a big boost. So for me, it's an important part of my running. And in fact, I remember a few years ago, WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, suggested that they might consider adding caffeine to the banned substances list. And I mean, I might have to just quit the sport if they did that.
Don, I know you've used caffeine pills, I think at Tour de Jeans, right? Did you?
No. I was happy to sleep all I wanted to there at Tour de Jeans for plenty of time. But I learned from Lee McKinley that to hold off on those caffeine goos or caffeine-aided foods to the later part of the race, not to use them early on, and so to watch how you dispense them. So that was a good lesson that he taught to me, so that you could use your silver bullet when you needed it. And if it was much as a psychological boost or a physiological boost, didn't matter, as long as boost was involved, I think a good idea. And one of the things that we've learned, it was on this podcast about caffeine, is it takes about 6 hours for it to move through your system. So it has a long lifespan.
Actually, that's the half life. It takes 5 to 7 hours to get rid of only half of that caffeine.
Yeah. So what, I don't know if that means to take a lot more or to use it judiciously, especially on the multi-day running stuff. If you plan on sleeping some 6 hours earlier, you might want to curve the caffeine.
So one, I just remembered the enzyme that the caffeine blocks, and again, it's in the book Why We Sleep. And I found the author. His name is Matthew Walker. He's a PhD and has studied sleep most of his career. But he talks about a chemical or an enzyme called adenonine that is produced by the liver, and it's almost like if you can think of an hourglass. When you wake up, that adenonine starts filling. And once it reaches the top of, or as it starts climbing to the top, it starts telling your body to shut down things, you know, like your mind. It slows down your mind, slows down your breathing. And what caffeine does is it blocks that receptor so that your body does not see that adenonine level rise. Interestingly enough, to Don's point, you know, 5 to 7 hours after is the half-life of caffeine. And once the caffeine is done or it leaves the body, that adenonine is still at that high peak. And so there's an immediate bam where you have a caffeine crash. Which I know a lot of coffee drinkers, you know, in the afternoon, you know, after they have their morning cup, they go through the day, and about 5 to 7 hours after, so mid-afternoon, they start seeing this caffeine crash. Interestingly, also is in the caffeine book by Michael Pollan, he tried an experiment where he's a pretty big coffee drinker, and he went cold turkey, quit drinking coffee or any caffeine, and he talks about his experience. I'll let you read the book to find out what his experience was. But anyway, that's my topic.
That was a good topic, Scott.
All right.
All right, Don, it's your turn.
He may have moved into second place before I even disclose mine. Hey, my title is Give Me Five. Give Me Five.
Well, it's in light of the pandemic, it's not giving me a high five. That would be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it's sleep related. You need another five minutes. The snooze button. You're talking about the snooze button, Freeman.
Could be AJW.
Oh, I see. So, or it could be like you come in, you say to your pacer, I just need a 5 minute nap or something like that. I think it's more around aid station management. Just give me five of those Oreos. just give me five of those. Just give me five of those M&Ms. I think it's a clever title, which is giving runners tips about ways to manage their going into the aid station. You know how we tell them, before you get to an aid station, plan out what you're going to need and what you're going to want. And they're just saying, just make sure if you want five Oreos, you go in there and say, give me five.
Yeah. So you guys were both wrong, but what you had right is it is a clever title. So,
and it has to do with five of something.
What's that?
And it has to do with five of something.
That's right. Hey, so this published April 12th, 2017 in the New York Times by Gretchen Reynolds. And the title of her article is An Hour of Running May Add 7 Hours to Your Life. And so this was an interesting, easy read. And it goes like this. Running may be the single most effective exercise to increase life expectancy. So they had me right there. I'm reading on at that point. This interests me. Compared to non-runners, they tended to live about 3 additional years, even if they run slowly, sporadically, smoke, drink, and they're overweight. So you can do all of that stuff and run slow, which works for me, and have another 3 years on your life. So there were some distinguished scientists, and they scrutinized this data, and it came from the Cooper Institute in Dallas. And the analysis found that as little as 5 minutes of daily running was associated with prolonged lifespans.
Only 5 minutes.
Yeah. So listen to this. So high mileage runners wondered if they could be doing too much. And at some undefined number of miles or hours, running might be counterproductive and even contribute to premature mortality. So, well, maybe there's a limit to how much good is good. And a few people even question this, and I don't think anybody that's listening to this would question this. They said whether running really added materially to a person's lifespan. Could it be, they asked rather peevishly, that in order to reduce your risk of dying by a year, you had to spend an equivalent of a year's worth of time on the trails or the track, producing no discernible net gain? Definitely not a runner, right? I mean, I think it adds to your life. So let me go on to the conclusion here before you guys join in on this discussion. Okay, perhaps the most interesting, the researchers calculated that hour for hour running statistically returns more time to people's lives than it consumes. 2 hours of running per week, that much training. A typical runner would spend less than 6 months over their lifetime actually running, but add 3.2 years to their life for a net gain of 2.8. So it really added to it. But we have to remember, running doesn't make you immortal, and the maximum benefit was about 3 extra years. So give me 5 minutes a day, get out there and run. Go ahead and do the most effective exercise, which is running. We're moving our entire body. We're using all of our limbs, and we've all found that if you want to really get in shape, there's no trade-off for running. It's really good. You use your whole torso, your lower body. Cycling just uses your legs, and running is just fantastic, and that's why we do it.
So, go ahead, gentlemen. Are you saying that running adds life, but cycling does not?
No, I didn't say that.
Oh,
I just
okay.
this was about running, and I just made a comment that running does just involve our entire bodies. And so that's probably why they use that as for the study.
I'd be curious about the piece at the beginning about running, even running slowly. I wonder if there is no, in other words, it sounds like if you run 6 minute miles or 12 minute miles, it doesn't really matter. You're not going to get more lifespan benefit by running faster necessarily. It's more just the amount of time you run or how much running is a part of your life. Did you get a sense of that?
Well, I think that you might argue, and this isn't sidestepping your question, you might have a greater benefit running slower because you can do it over the decades instead of injuring yourself by being a speed addict.
Yeah, I guess one of the sort of source of my question is perhaps if one of your goals in life is to extend your life, then having running slowly as a part of it would be a good goal, something to introduce, and sounds like something you could introduce into your life even relatively late in the game.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
I wonder where that threshold is that you mentioned, Don. If running 5 minutes a day can add up to 3 years, where is the threshold that says running 5 minutes is good, running 10 minutes is good, running 4 hours is bad? That it starts, there's a tipping point. I wonder where that threshold is.
Yeah, they didn't talk about any of it being bad. They just talked about the maximum dose that you could use to your benefit. So as little as 2 hours per week is what they came with. But there was just a statement in one of the paragraphs that even 5 minutes a day has a benefit. You know, getting out there, moving your body and pumping your heart, there's benefit in that.
You know, I also think, I wonder how much of this is physical and how much of this is psychological. Because we all know that running is an outlet psychologically, that it reduces stress, it reduces anxiety, maybe depression. I wonder if that plays into the longer lifespan as well.
Yeah, that's 1.6 of the 3 years. <It's
psychological>. All right, should we go around again?
Yeah,
we should.
All right, one more set of titles. So you guys remember that great, great Public Enemy song, Don't Believe the Hype?
Can you sing it? Can you hum a verse?
No, it's a rap song. I can't remember. I can't rap. So the title, the picture in the magazine, it says, Don't Believe the Hype, but the don't is crossed out. So the title of the article, so it's like, don't, but the don't is crossed out. And then it says, believe the hype. So the title is Believe the Hype.
That is very, very creative, Andy. Very creative. Don, I'll let you go first.
were you buying time with that creative yes. comment?
Yeah.
Don't believe the hype.
Well, no, it's the title is Believe the Hype.
Oh, Believe the Hype.
Correct. The don't is crossed out.
Okay, I got it. So I really do think it's about introducing others to the running community, and that you should believe everything you hear. As people are saying, it was fantastic. I loved it. I mean, even when you puke, it's enjoyable, and we tell stories about it. The hype is that everything in the end, after you've finished it, is wonderful about our sport. Sometimes in the middle of it, not so wonderful, but when we're done, it's all glorious. So believe the hype, get out there and join the trail nation.
I'm going to get a little more specific. I think that Andy somehow got a hold of a pair of the new Hoka 910s.
Oh.
And as much negativity and laughter and comic statements that have been made about that shoe, he got a hold of a pair and he went out and ran some downhills, and he thinks it is the next best shoe.
You know what, Scott? I think that's a brilliant conclusion after hearing that.
Well, thank you.
I think right now what AJW is doing is scrambling to make that his actual article.
Oh, no. I've already written this article, and it's neither of those things, you guys.
Okay.
So, you know, you guys know, it was about a week ago or so, as the pandemic was really setting in. JB Benna made the surprise announcement that for the first time since the release of his award-winning film in 2011, Unbreakable, Unbreakable was going to be available for free on YouTube. For 9 years, the only way to get Unbreakable was to buy the DVD and watch the DVD or to get the digital stream. So this article is a review of Unbreakable. And the Believe the Hype is not only the hype of the movie, where people had been going for 9 years, what the heck is this Unbreakable about? It's how could a movie be this good? And Western States is, how could Western States be this good? But the true Believe the Hype is, how can Anton Kupichka be so beautiful? and once you see Unbreakable, once you see the movie, and you see his sinewy figure, and you see that body and the beard and the flowing hair, you have to believe the hype.
Oh, that's hilarious.
This is getting a bit creepy for me, Scott. I got to be honest.
I thought he was going to say, believe the hype, that it was, everybody said it was such a good movie. And then he all of a sudden takes this sharp 90 degree turn with his man crush.
It's all about the cult of Anton.
You know,
go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say, do you remember, I think you can find it on YouTube. And if I can, I'll link the clip of that iconic video of him cutting his shoes up, and then you see him running, and they show his running form, and it's dubbed in with some French rap music or something. I don't know what the music. I've been trying to find that track, and it is absolutely one of my favorite videos to watch. Just amazing running form. It is beautiful.
And I've got to tell you, we've talked a lot about the trail ultra running boom and who deserves credit or blame for it, right? You could talk about when McDougal came out with the Born to Run book, or what we're talking about now, J.B. Benna's movie Unbreakable, but honestly, you talk to people about a person who got them into running in the trails in the mountains, Anton is at the top of many of those lists. And of course it was part of, this guy living in the back of his truck, running insane amount of miles across the mountains of Colorado with no shirt and long hair and shoes cut up with scissors and so forth. But it really, he captured a moment in time. And the thing about, the way he appears in Unbreakable, especially since he ends up being caught and not winning the race, getting second place, but it just kind of, it makes him human as well. So I think, there are still people, by the way, who think Anton is, running and winning ultra marathons, and he hasn't run a race in 3-4 years, still runs, but not a race. And so I just thought that'd be a funny title, Believe the Hype.
you know that video that you're talking about, Scott.
Yeah.
You were pacing me on a race. I think it was Rio de Lago, and we were getting into those miles that you start looking more like the Hunchback of Notre Dame and not Anton Karpichka. Mm-hmm. And you pulled that off your phone. You had me watch that video. I was happy to stop.
Wow.
And you had me watch that, and so I would remember how to run.
I was a good pacer.
Yeah, very good pacer.
Wow.
So hey, on that topic, I'm interested in knowing if you guys have a running video or movie that influenced you, that helped you become a passionate trail runner.
Well, for me, it's also a Western States movie, but it was the one from 1982 called Desperate Dreams. You can still find it on VCR tape. But it chronicled the race between Jim Howard and Jim King, and in the early 80s, Western States, lots of sort of old footage, and it's really hot, and they have, kind of jury-rigged water bottles and things like that, and short shorts and road shoes, and it just goes, my God, these guys are just kind of on the cutting edge of, doing of sanity perhaps. And I think I saw it in like the mid 90s. And so it's called Desperate Dreams. I think you can still find it, in the corners of the internet, but that really, really inspired me. And I still love to watch it from now and then, even to this day.
Hey, Andy, is that the one that was, produced when ABC Worldwide of Sports was following Western States?
Different. I mean, there are also some videos of ABC's Wide World of Sports covering it. There might have been a year that Wide World of Sports was also covering it, that Desperate Dreams was made, but Desperate Dreams was a film in and of itself.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. There was a VHS that I remember watching. In fact, it may have been yours, Don.
I'd like that back, by the way, Scott.
I don't know where it is. But it talked about the front runners, and I can't even remember who they were, but I do remember there was a school teacher, and it actually followed her the first time she ran Western States, and she DNF'd. And then they also went back and followed her the second year when she completed it. And I remember that being very good. But I, hands down, I have to say Unbreakable was important to me. That's the year that I was fortunate enough to run Western States was 2011. Mm-hmm. So I was there. Now, I didn't see any of them. Except for at the start, I saw Jeff Rose in the bathroom prior to the shotgun going off. It's a great movie. In fact, I knew that it was free, but it's been a few years since I've watched it. I have a digital copy. I need to go back and watch that. So thanks for the reminder.
Yeah, so I'm with you, Scott. The movie that you're talking about that I'd like returned is the one that influenced me a great deal. And it was about Western States, and it was done on a public broadcasting station of some kind. You know, it was produced in that way. I remember in the beginning of this, there was like this water and a drip of water going into it, and just that was kind of the start. And it had Gordy Ainslie on there, and he made a statement, you know, once you've run this race, it changes you forever. Mm-hmm. And it had Topher Gaylord on there. He was talking about his experience. And I know exactly who that runner is that you're talking about.
The teacher?
The school teacher. Uh-huh. But her name is escaping me, but I would recognize her. I would see her. I haven't seen her on the trails in a long time, but I saw her at AR50. She was running that same race, and I was new. And she yelled at me, "Hey, Freeman, you shouldn't be running that hill." Of course, it was early in the race, and she was absolutely right. And she reminded me when she passed me later.
Is that Race for the Soul?
Yes, that's Race for the Soul.
Yeah,
that's it.
That is such a good video. I don't know if it's still available. It might be on YouTube somewhere. Definitely worth the effort to ask Google. Race for the Soul.
What was
it? It was documented the 2001 race. That was actually my first Western States.
Is that right?
Race for the Soul.
What was the title of the one that you said?
Desperate Dreams.
Desperate Dreams.
Yeah.
I'm just making some notes here.
You put these in show notes or something, Scott? Do we do show notes?
Yeah, it's linked to the podcast when you click on it.
Got it.
All right, who's next?
I think I'm next. Okay, here we go. Again, my title has a question mark in it.
Okay.
Does the tail wag the dog? Ooh, I think I stumped both of you. Does the tail wag the dog? I win. That's how you win. You just keep speechless. I win.
Okay. Let me
tell you this. I'll give you a little bit of a hint.
Oh, I don't need a hint.
This article is not in the front of the magazine. It may be the last page of the magazine. It was added as filler.
Metaphorically, I think what he's talking about is a belt buckle, silver and bronze. Does the tail wag the dog? Does the lure of that sub 24-hour finish dictate how you run the first 25% of that race, which typically is where a person might sabotage their day, going out hard? Does the tail, that belt buckle, wag the runner?
I'm going to take a little different tack here. I think it's actually an article about running with your dog and proper etiquette and technique for running with your dog on leash, off leash. What happens when you encounter other dogs? We know that people love their dogs, and especially in this age of social distancing, our only running companions these days might be our dogs. And so does the tail wag the dog? Does the mood of the dog affect what you're going to do on that run, or does your plan for the run determine what you're going to do when you take your dog out there? So I'm going to say it's just a study on running with your dog.
Hey, and Scott, before you do the big reveal here, since we've been running together lately, 6 feet apart or better, I've you have been noticing small bags of dog poo inside these plastic bags, and it really makes you angry every time you see it and you comment on it each time. So I'm thinking you might be trying to do a public service announcement in the middle of our podcast. So I think that might be it.
You're absolutely right, Don. Here in Northern California, I think it's probably everywhere. We see more people out on the trails because they have more time, and they've just found that that's a good way to get out of their house. And because of that, there are people on the trails that are taking their dogs, and they don't have good etiquette where they're bagging the poop, but then they're leaving it. I think one run we saw like 4 bags of poop. And that's not what this article is about. But Don went down the philosophical route, which he's wrong. And he took the more literal side, which is closer. It's actually a lot simpler than that. And here is what the article is about. What can we learn from our dogs? So you wake up in the morning and you start putting on your running shoes. And that dog, what does the dog do? It knows.
He does the downward dog.
That dog
starts going nuts.
The tail starts wagging you cannot, it knows exactly. Or you could have that dog on its back and you're giving it its best belly rub and it's just enjoying life. And during that belly rub, if you said, want to go for a run, it will abandon its favorite belly rub and it wants to go running. I don't think I've ever seen a dog that you say, want to go for a run, and it goes, I'm really just not feeling good today. You know, I kind of have this little hitch in my giddy up. I'm going to take a rest day. Dogs never, ever do that. They live in the moment. They don't have, of course, we have stress and anxiety and stuff like that that we have to deal with, and dogs don't. Well, I guess you could argue that with some pet psychologists. But
since your dog obviously is talking to you in complete sentences, maybe you should just ask.
Yeah. But my point is I think that we can learn something from dogs and live in the moment and enjoy not only the idea of, yes, I'm going to get up this morning or this get out at lunch or get out this evening. I'm going to go for a run and I'm going to enjoy it. But also in the middle of the run, I'm just going to enjoy this run. I'm going to wag my tail and I'm going to jump in that puddle up here and I'm just going to have a good time. That's what we can learn from dogs. By the way, the idea came from, I need to get some credit, from Trail Runner Magazine. The author is Ben Snyder McGrath. He had an article that he wrote about dogs, and basically I plagiarized it.
That's a good article.
That's what we do here.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of people who run with their dogs. I think you'd probably get a fair bit of traction with that article.
Yeah. And Scott, I thought you were going with, you know, the first thing the dog does, regardless of its age, is it does that stretch first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
And maybe we should learn and stretch a little bit. And you really had me thinking that way when you said, we just put on our shoes and run out the door, which, you know, guilty. And maybe I should do at least, maybe I should put my, you know what? I'm leaving my, that's the reason I leave my socks on the ground, so that I can stretch to pick them up.
Yeah. You know, I have to tell the story, Don, because it's your story and you probably forgot it.
Yes.
And I want to take credit for it. But your daughter has a dog.
Yes.
And at night, the night before, you will tell Roscoe, want to go for a good boy run? And that dog knows and remembers that it's going for a run. It's dreaming about that run all night long. And when you wake up in the morning, bam, it's waiting for you. Right.
Yeah, he's whining at my door because he knows it's a run day. And it just doesn't happen occasionally. He knows. He's a smart dog. He's an Australian Shepherd.
The night before you're not running and you don't say good boy run, the dog sleeps in.
Right.
I think that's amazing. So there's a lot we can learn from dogs. I don't think we need to eat the horse poop on the trail like the dogs do.
Good point. Oh, wait, are we ready? Yep. AJW, do you have any other dog comments? Are you ready for to guess
what I'm my good. Article I'm is good. About? I think I was, I get a half a point for
you
that.
You get half a point, yep.
At least my topic was actually about dogs.
You get a half a point. And as the popular game show on TV, points mean absolutely nothing.
Right. Well, that's because neither one of us have a complete point. It's zero for Scott, zero for Don, and a half point for AJW. Yeah. Here's my title. Running, comma.
Oh,
is it good for your knees? Question mark.
Oh, running.
Is it good for your knees?
That's not very cryptic.
Well, I mean, sometimes, you know, the obvious things are the most difficult. So
this is an article about all of the questions that people ask us. They say, oh, my gosh, running, that's terrible for your knees, or 100 miles. I couldn't even drive that far. Or what do you eat when you're out there? Or what do you do if you have to go to the bathroom? I think this is just an article about all those questions that people ask us. And of course, usually at the top of the list is running. Doesn't that just trash your knees? It's that article about all those questions that we get asked all the time.
All right. You took the easy one. Go ahead, Scott.
I got this one. I'm getting full points for this one.
All right.
This is what it is. During a long training run or a race, there comes a point where you have to fall on your knees and ask your maker for help because there is no way you're going to finish this race on your own. And that's when you gain a stronger relationship with your maker, is during these long runs where you realize that you can't do it on your own. And it is good for your knees because you create that relationship with your maker.
Wow. Very nice. Okay. So are you ready for the reveal, gentlemen?
Point.
No point. Okay. On January 18th, 2017, if that gives you any hints so far, you guys can change your guesses. Okay. Published in the New York Times by, again, Gretchen Reynolds. So I didn't have to look far for my. It was like kind of like one search.
Yeah.
And the title of this article, Running May Be Good for Your Knees. I was short on time.
Okay. Hey, we gave you extra time to come up with a title.
I know, that's why I came up with such a good one.
Oh.
Okay. Many people worry that running ruins knees, but a new study finds out that the activity might in fact benefit your knees, and it changes the biochemical environment inside your knee and helps it keep it working smoothly. So instead of wearing knees out, it's actually strengthening the knees and providing some biochemical environment, things that are healthier, and they can actually measure them. So here's what they did. They went in and give me a second. They did an epidemiological study of long-term runners and show that there are generally less likely to develop osteoarthritis, the things that wear the knees out when you get bone to bone knees that have worn the meniscus out, and you have bone spurs around the knee to try to help stabilize it. And they found out that people that ran ended up with fewer diagnoses of this osteoarthritis. And they thought maybe that's just because people don't weigh as much. You're not carrying around extra body weight, so that's better for your knees, which certainly is good. But they also found this at BYU. They did a study and they went in and they drew blood from an arm and they siphoned a small amount of synovial fluid, the lubricating fluid that reduces friction inside the joint. They siphoned off a small amount inside the knee. And then they put people in wheelchairs, and these people, there's only 30 of them, and they put 15 of them in a wheelchair and 15 the other 15, all 30 were in the wheelchair, but 15 of them had to just stay in the wheelchair and the other 15 got on a treadmill and ran. And then on the next day or on separate days, they either stayed seated, the ones that were assigned to sit, and the other ones ran on an outside type of running environment. And then they looked at the knee. They went and looked at the blood again, and they looked at the synovial fluid, and they found this, that they focused on the molecules that were associated with inflammation, and they found out there was less of this inside the people's knees that were the runners. There was actually, since joints require movement to get that synovial fluid to wash around, and you need that synovial fluid moving so that it exchanges with the arteries and the vessels that are outside that joint, making that exchange, you need movement in that knee to move that fluid to make that exchange. So people that were sedentary actually had more inflammatory products in the knee. But get this, they also looked for another substance, and it's called cartilage oligometric matrix protein, or for short, COMP, cartilage oligometric matrix protein, which I've said officially three times in my entire life, that word.
We'll say comp.
Yeah, say comp. So people, and know this about comp, people with arthritis have about five times as much comp in their synovial fluid as people with healthy knees. So they have found not only the people that were running had less inflammatory agents in the knee, they also found this other substance that indicates the health of knees. There was less in people that ran, and five times higher in people with unhealthy knees. So there was a shift in this level of this comp in the people that ran. So these findings suggest that a single half hour session of running changes the interior of the knee. In fact, it doesn't wear it out. It helps stabilize it and support it, makes it a healthier environment. So maybe just like a running stream, you know, streams that run have cleaner water. Knees need to move. They need to be loaded and unloaded. And when you load a knee, you squeeze the fluid out from that meniscus. And when you rest it, it allows it to reabsorb. And meniscus is a living tissue. They're living cells, and they need to have exchange of nutrients. So we need to stay active. So on that point,
Don, you really brought the feel good titles this week.
I've got one more too.
We're living longer from running, and we've got more synovial fluid. You might as well just drop everything and run.
Well, I'm sure people are probably looking for their earbuds so they don't miss the next one coming up, because I do have a cherry on the top for us. Hey, but here, listen to this. It was a study that was done on rabbits, and they took rabbits and they secured one of their legs, and then they unfortunately, but for science purposes, they sacrificed the animals at different intervals. At 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 12 weeks, 18 weeks, and they looked at this limb that they had secured. And this is on the concept that joints need motion to stay healthy, that there are living tissues, and when you remove the ability to move the joint, they end up showing signs of early arthritis. And so when they sacrificed these rabbits, they found that the three other limbs that were not secured looked perfectly healthy, but there was a progression of arthritis through each one of these limbs that were secured, and it progressed as that time increased. So it's important that joints are moved, and they need movement to stay healthy.
Well, I think I may have said this on the podcast before. I used to ski.
Yeah, water or snow.
but I have actually had both of my knees ACLs replaced in both of my knees. And I always thought, oh, I can't run. You know, you run into these people all the time that say, oh, I can't run, my knees are bad. Well, I had some issues with my knees from skiing, and running has really helped. I've always maintained, I didn't know the science behind it, but I always maintained that running helped lubricate all those soft tissues and make them more pliable and more flexible so that they do what they're supposed to do. So I would agree with the scientists. Of course.
Hey, well, you know, when you use something, it gets stronger or better. You know, we can talk about our cardiovascular, our lungs and our heart, and the exchange of of oxygen throughout the muscles, the additional vascular, the arteries and the vessels that grow in and around, we get more of that. And same thing, if you're working your bicep and doing bicep curls, it can get larger. And why wouldn't that happen with our hip joint and our knees and our feet? Those ligaments and muscles get stronger when we use them. And if you want to make something stronger, and knees are certainly something you want strong, you want the muscles around them to strengthen, you want the cartilage to get denser and tougher, and you want the ligaments to adapt to these stresses and get thicker and more secure. So you have to use your stuff if you want them to last. And typically, if you go into, and I didn't do a study on this, but we can just see it from anecdotal evidence, people that usually end up with knees and hips, you excluded AJW, who had a successful resurfacing, which is a great topic in itself. Usually you see people that end up going in for a repair to the meniscus. They're a deconditioned person that's sedentary, maybe overweight, haven't used the knee, and then they get up and twist. And as they get up and twist, a tear happens, and they have to have it surgically repaired. Mm-hmm. That if they had been conditioning that knee and strengthening the muscles around it and strengthening the density of the cartilage and the ligaments, that knee would have been able to stand up off that couch, even if there was a twist to it. So, you know, I think the people that we find in getting replacements to joints are people that haven't used it versus the people that have. Is my mic still on?
You're still online. Okay. No, I just think that you dropped your mic. I mean, that was a mic drop. Ooh. A moment. I think that that's a fascinating article.
Okay. Hey, do we have any other?
One more round.
If you have one, I have a shorty. Yep.
Up there, let's do one more set of shorties. I'm riffing off Scotty, who is asking questions with his titles. My title is longer better? Is longer better?
And it's this a yes or no? True or false?
Well, no, it's an article. I'll explain the article, but
I'm catching on. I'm catching on.
It's an article, Freeman.
It's an article. don't believe the hype, Freeman.
Is longer better? I think that it is about shorts. We've gone from these short shorts that Andy mentioned in his 1982 documentary film of Western States, where they had really high shorts. I'm thinking of John Stockton, that played for many years in the NBA for the Utah Jazz. And even though as he was ending his career, shorts were getting longer, he did not believe the hype. And he kept those high shorts because he knew that he could perform better. So I think it's about trail running shorts.
Boy, I think you're right, Scott. And had I had more time, I would have came up with that one as well. I think it's a good one. So I'm going to go with the obvious. Is running longer better than running shorter? Are people happier after the longer the race? Is there a correlation between level of happiness? Longer the race is more satisfaction and accomplishment. Longer races, are people that run 100 miles happier than people that are running 50 Ks? That's what I think. That's where I think he's going.
Well, guess what? Scotty gets a point.
Oh,
yes, he gets a full point. There it is. Nice. This is about shorts. You know, about well, you guys know that that the Western States 100 spends money every year on research, and about 15 they commissioned a study once the race was canceled this past week to study the last 15 years of Western States champions and how long their shorts were.
Are you kidding, AJ?
They studied so you had, you know, people like Scott Jurek, who had very, very short shorts, and people like Courtney DeWalter, who had very, very long shorts. And so they commissioned this study, and they determined that there is no conclusive evidence one way or another of short shorts or long shorts being better.
It's inconclusive.
That's correct. So go ahead and wear your long shorts. Go ahead and wear your short shorts. Go ahead and wear no shorts. It's up to you.
Okay.
Hey, so speaking of wearing no shorts, do you remember this story that that there was a runner that was chafing so bad that he took his shorts off in between aid stations
and ran naked.
Or did I get duped being a newbie out on the trail? And the guys were telling me that, and they go, "Let's see if Freeman goes for this. He's pretty gullible."
And he ran naked
in between aid stations because the chafing was so bad.
I would think that would cause more chafing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
There's a lot All of right. there's a lot more movement when you're not secure.
It was cold.
No, I have never heard that. I've never heard that.
Okay. All right. Scott, do you have an extra a shorty?
You know, I have another one, but it is too long. We can okay. wait till the next time we do it. It's a long one.
Oh, I've got to come up with the title.
yes, Don. The whole thing is about the title.
Okay, here's
why don't
title.
You just copy the title of the article you read?
Right. From Mrs. What's her name?
Yeah.
The other link Gretchen. That you the Gretchen. Yeah, Gretchen from the New York Times.
Gretchen Reynolds, the great Gretchen Reynolds.
We should have her on the podcast.
Well, essentially we did. Okay. Here's my title.
Okay.
How much? Question mark.
Oh, I got it. Another question mark. This is about the rising cost of entry fees.
Oh.
It's about the rising cost of race entry fees and how people are complaining about them, and yet they're still willing to pay them. It's kind of like, how much does this sport gonna cost me? Everyone used to tell me it was so simple and all you need are shorts and a shirt and shoes and you're good to go. How much? That's what it's about.
Gosh, I'm a bit intimidated. That's better than my actual article. go ahead, Scott. What's your guess?
I think that it has to do with a dozen eggs at the grocery store right now. How much?
Why has that happened? Are people trying to make their own vaccine using eggs these days? What's going on? All right.
All right. So what does old Gretchen have to say?
Just two and a half hours of weekly running increases men's testosterone by 15%.
How much?
15. Proving once again, exercise is good for you and good for the bedroom.
Wait, how many minutes? And is there a law of diminishing returns here?
It was two and a half hours of running and 15% increased testosterone. I don't know how that converts to minutes in the bedroom, Scott.
So if I go out for 5 hours, do I get a 30% boost?
Well, so it was in fact short.
I'll have to construct my own study.
Man, I tell you, Don gets the feel-good award for the day, though. Yeah. He's got testosterone, he's got knees, and he's got living longer. Yeah. I mean, if you want to hang out at that guy's house during the quarantine.
Yeah.
Well, good. I've got to tip my hat to Gretchen Reynolds at the New York Times, who is
was that really an article by her?
No.
Oh, okay.
I did a Google search on interesting facts about running.
So you went all.
Did you do that search about 2 minutes ago?
No, actually, 2 minutes before the podcast, when I realized I only had two, and you guys might ask for three.
Oh my gosh! That I've really enjoyed this. Thank you guys for lightening my mood and taking it off of this the bad that's happening right now in society. So thank you very much.
This was really great, you guys. It was fun to laugh and joke around and remember that there's even in the midst of things that are going on, there's always a lighter side of life that's worth spending a little time with, even if it's just an hour or so.
And the final score, I think it was 1.5-1-0 is what I by count. I'm not going to mention any names, but that is the score.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a pretty good score.
And points mean nothing.
Right.
Absolutely nothing.
AJW thought it was a pretty good score because he was the 1.5.
Right.
Hey, Andy, tell us a little bit about what you're doing tomorrow. We're here at on Friday and tomorrow, Saturday, you're doing a virtual run. Can you tell us about that?
Well, my good friends at I Run Far, Megan and Brian, have put together a whole kind of month-long series of things they're calling Operation Inspiration to get people inspired and try to bring the community together virtually because we can't be together physically. This was something they thought of in response to the myriad of race cancellations. And so tomorrow, around the world, they've invited people to participate in a group workout. It can be a run, a bike ride, a weight training. It just has to be an hour. Figure out a way to record it, either on a GPS device or something else. Use some sort of social media to tell people about it. Hashtag Operation Inspiration is the hashtag, and it's just to get people out and celebrate. And they're going to do a miniature race day race cast of it, like they do when they're covering races on I Run Far, and have a few virtual post race hangouts where people will be able to get online and chat with one another about what they did. I'm going to go out for about a two hour trail run in a local park that's fortunately still open. And there are people all over the world. Killian's going to do it. Tim Tollefson, a bunch of Ian Sharman, Jason Koop, Courtney DeWalter and Maggie Guterl. A lot of people are kind of signing up and are just going to jump in and participate in this to sort of bring the community together virtually since we can't be together physically.
You know, and we have a lot of people doing this as some fallout from American River 50 being canceled. They made a challenge as well. And one of our local runners, John Heaps, took up the challenge and actually ran the full 50 miles, not on the actual course. He charted his own course. But I saw him out at the familiar parking lot to people around here at the trailhead at the Auburn Dam Overlook, and he was coming running through, and I thought he just got out of his car, but in fact,
really?
He was at mile 34. that helps when you're young.
Yeah, right.
He's a youngster. I have shoes older than he is, and he just looked fantastic. He was enthusiastic, and I just love the spirit of the ultra runner to get out there and just do it. And he didn't post it and look for recognition, and I wouldn't have known it unless I saw him and ran across his path there at that his aid station, mile 34. I just like the quiet determination and enthusiasm and the passion that runners have for our sport. So my hat's off to you, John Heaps. Well done.
Yeah, way to go, John. That's awesome.
Well, that's good. Well, thank you, guys. That was a lot of fun. Make sure you go out and run responsibly.
Moss.
How can Anton Krupicka be so beautiful? and once you see Unbreakable, once you see the movie, and you see his sinewy figure, and you see that body and the beard and the flowing hair, you have to believe the hype.
Oh, that's hilarious.
This is getting a bit creepy for me, Scott. I gotta be honest.
With his man crush.
It's all about the cult of Anton.